We'll be bringing it to a conclusion on Easter Sunday. And so today we're in Matthew chapters 19 and 20. Clearly we haven't been able to touch every moment of Matthew's account of the life of Jesus, but I hope that through this it's encouraged you to read it, encouraged you to dig in, encouraged you to discover new things through the text as well that have been enriching to you in your lives and transforming in how you see Jesus. So Matthew 19 and 20, these really form the teaching that Matthew wants to put together just before Jesus walks to Jerusalem. And it's intriguing what he includes here. Matthew 21, which we'll look at next week, is the Palm Sunday narrative that then spins us off into the Easter week. So these two chapters are a whole lot of teaching that Matthew feels we need to hear before we get to that next stage of the story. And just a quick glance through it is quite intriguing as well. Now, I'm guessing that Jesus wanted to say something quite important to his followers before the journey to the cross. And I think those words become even more real to us. What are the things that you would want to say before you know what's going to happen next? What would be the most important things that you would love to speak about? And there's a sense that we hear these words of Jesus in the light of that. I mean, he's been walking with these disciples. They've been walking him for, let's say, 3 years, and he's had a lot to say to them, a lot to show them. But it seems like there's a real focus that comes in these couple of chapters just before the beginning of the end, which we know was just the end of the beginning, of course. And so as we look through Matthew 19 and 20, I think it's worth taking note of everything that he had to say. Now, here's Jesus, and Paul writes very eloquently in his letter to the Philippians that Jesus, who being in very nature God, was about to humble himself to become obedient, but not only obedient, but obedient to death, and not only obedient to death, but obedient to death on a cross, a criminal's death. And Jesus, about to humble himself in that way, wanted to share something that was about serving and about humility to his followers as well. He wanted to embed this sort of sense of the values that he came to share with us into the lives of these followers of his, because he knew what was coming next and he knew what that meant for them in the future as well. So I don't think I'm surprised that he wants to talk about humility and he wants to talk about serving. And he wants to talk about those who are least. He wants desperately to talk about those things because the disciples need to understand this is why he came. And so in Matthew 19, verses 13 and 14, Matthew begins this block of teaching with just a couple of verses about the importance of children that are brought to Jesus. Then verse 13, then people brought little children to Jesus for him to place his hands on them and pray for them, but the disciples rebuked them. And Jesus said, let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these. When he had placed his hands on them, he went on from there. And here's Jesus just saying, you know what? This is the heart that I want you to have. This is the expression of my love I want you to convey to people. It's like being a little child. It's like knowing what values that are so important to them, to children, that I want you to embed in your life as well. The kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these. And then he goes on with other bits of teaching that I think reinforce what it is he had to say in that moment. I'm sure for the disciples, as they began to understand the next steps for Jesus was the cross, they were beginning to ask questions, and James highlighted that for us last week, the importance of the disciples' questions as they began to realize, what's going to happen next? And in Matthew 19 and 20, we see some really important questions that they're asking that I think all of us would ask as well. What's in it for me? The disciples ask. What's the reward I'm going to get for following you? Then there's the question of, it's not fair, is it? We've been following you all this time, and yet there are people who are just beginning this journey, and I'm not sure how I can work that out as to what they're going to get and what I'm going to get. And then in Matthew 20, we have the lovely incident of James and John's mum, you know, coming and falling at Jesus' feet and saying, I want my two boys to be on the left hand or the right hand of you in your kingdom. They're beginning to wrestle with, you know, what does this mean to follow you, Jesus? What's the end result of this for me? And so those questions, which I'm sure we've all asked at times, become reality for Jesus to try and deal with as he prepares the disciples for life without him physically here on earth. I mean, clearly things go wrong in our world. Our motivation gets mixed up. Our values get a little bit all over the place at times. You know, the world is in a mess, as it probably was there. Relationships get broken. The way adults treat children goes wrong. There's sin in the church, which Jesus wants to deal with. There's divorce. There's disparity of wealth distribution. You know, things are not running smoothly then, and they're not running smoothly now. But Jesus wants us to understand that before all these things happen, when things happen, our view of who he is and the values in his kingdom are so important to help us through those difficult times. When things do get a bit confusing in our lives and in the life of our world, Jesus wants to help us to understand how we can view it all. And he wants to deal with the brokenness and the sin that goes on, and the sin that, as the writer to Hebrews says, so easily trips us up and entangles us in our journey as well. How am I going to deal with that? And before he starts his journey to Jerusalem, he wants these values ringing in the ears of his followers so that they understand what's going to happen as a response to his death on the cross. And so in Matthew 19, we have the children coming. This is what I want you to be like. I want you to be like a little child because the kingdom belongs to them. Yeah, but what does that look like? What does it mean to be a little child? And so we then have this great encounter of the rich young man with Jesus. The rich young man who comes to him and says to him, you know, what does it take? Yeah, I've kept all these commandments. And Jesus says, you know what, that's good, but there's another step along the way. I want you to go home and sell everything you have and give it away. And so the disciples after that then in awe and wonder say, well, who then can be saved? Who then can be saved? If it's difficult for a man who's kept the law and has wealth and status and power to enter the kingdom, what hope is there for any of us? And Peter, of course, in verse 27 of chapter 19 says, we've left everything to follow you. What then will there be for us? It's a bold question, isn't it? What's in it for me? We've left everything. And the one who knows poverty, the one who stepped down from the riches of heaven to become obedient to death and death on a cross, says to them, but many who are first will be last, and many who are last will be first. Wow. If you want an answer to the question, there's his answer. Many who are first will be last, and many who are last will be first. Jesus has a different value, a different view on people and on what's going on with them. That the powerless and those without status, those without any wealth, God is generous with his grace towards those people. What's in it for us? Well, Peter, those who are first will be last, and those who are last will be first. And then he goes on in Matthew chapter 20, this amazing parable of the workers in the vineyard. The vineyard, of course, a very familiar image of Israel. I mean, those who are listening couldn't help but know that he was talking about them. And the owner goes to visit the local job center on the corner of a street. He visits it at 6 o'clock in the morning, at 9 o'clock in the morning, at midday, at 3 o'clock in the morning, and at 5 o'clock in the at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and 5 o'clock in the afternoon, an hour before the end of the day. And he hires workers all through the day. And when it comes to receiving the pay, he pays them all the same amount. One denarius, a usual day's pay, enough to feed your family for that particular day. Just what he'd promised. But the scandal of this story is, of course, that the owner pays those who only worked 1 hour the same as those who worked 12 hours. And even more scandalous was he paid those who were hired last, he paid them first, in front of all those who had given up a whole day to work as well. And as you can imagine, the workers were not very happy. The text says they grumbled. I'm sure that's putting it politely. And Jesus says in verse 16, so the last will be first, and the first will be last. See, God's way is to give everyone what he's promised. He isn't going to hold anything back from what he's promised, because he's generous with his grace. And before him, all human merit shrivels before the owner's self-giving love. But don't leave it too late to be hired. No one deserves this love and grace. No one earns it, but it is available and we can enjoy it now. Whether you're poor or a disciple or a fisherman or a tax collector or a rich young man or a Pharisee, everyone has the same offer. God is generous with his grace. His unmerited, undeserved favor is available for all who will ask. And then Jesus goes on to say to them, do you know what? I'm going up to Jerusalem now. And I'm going to be delivered into the hands of the chief priests and the teachers of the law. And they will condemn me to death. And then hand me over to be mocked and flogged and crucified. Are you prepared? Are you prepared to follow me then? But on the third day, he'll be raised to life. On the third day, he'll be raised to life. God is generous with his grace. And no matter our status, no matter our feeling of power or powerlessness, a child or an adult, no matter whether we've been working from 6 a.m. in the morning or we've just been hired at 5 p.m., the reward is the same. He's generous with his grace. The last become first in the kingdom of God. And Jesus says, you know, this is the new way. This is the new way. This is what I've come to show you. This is what I've come to prove to you, that the last will be first. There is a different way. At the end of the chapter in Matthew 20, Jesus says, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. That's what the story's about. That's why he came. And that's what he offers to each of us, to follow his way, to come and follow me. Sometimes it doesn't seem fair. Sometimes we ask, what's in it for me? But Jesus just says, don't hold on to your life. I'm generous with my grace, and you can enjoy that and live in the light of that as well. And of course, all made possible because of his sacrifice, because he humbled himself and invites us to join him. Jesus came for you. He came to seek and save those who are lost, lost in doubt, lost in confusion, lost in uncertainty, lost in power or status or wealth, confused about all of that. Jesus came for those people just like me and like you, to serve a slave, to give his life freely so that we might have life in all its fullness. And this morning we're going to remember that together. and come humbly before him and give him thanks.